There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
William Mullally is the Ticket's film critic, and he joins us every single Thursday from 3 o'clock. If you've got any questions for him whatsoever, feel free to ask them. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Well, it's kind of good to be back. I do partially wish I was still in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, he was in Tokyo. Can I just play your jingle? Because I've got to get it out of my system.
Please do.
Real time.
There we are. Right, okay. Carry on.
How was Japan?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I went to Anime Japan, which is the world's largest anime conference, and I also toured a couple of the big anime studios, including the studio that made Ghost in a Shell, one that I can't talk about because the project isn't coming out until 2019. But I saw some really amazing stuff there, and I loved it. I've always wanted to go. I'm covered right now in Japanese pro wrestling gear.
I was going to say, is that a watch?
No, it's
a bracelet.
It's actually a keychain that I'm wearing as a bracelet, but it's the IWGP Intercontinental Championship.
Ah.
And whoa.
I love it.
We thought there was something different about William when he walks in today, didn't we?
You're so funny, because sometimes you're really cool, and other times you're like, look at me pro wrestling bracelet. Which looks like one of those weird things they put around their waist when they win. Like, I would never expect to be able to pay you enough money to wear that.
I just like what I like.
Yeah. What was it we used to have in England? Lucky bags. It looks like it's come out of one of them lucky bags, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A few sweets and bits.
No offense. You've had your beard cut as well.
Yeah. I'm sure someone out there thinks it's cool.
And cherry blossom, you saw that too?
I did. It's Sakura season, or cherry blossom season, so just the entire city was full of these cherry blossoms, and every single hotel was booked. Everyone wanted to be there. I just happened to be there at the same time.
Amazing.
Made some calls, make it happen. No, fantastic. It's the best place.
Okay then, so let's start talking movies, I suppose, and the big one this week, Ready Player One.
Ready Player One. Yes, this was a hugely best-selling book. It's been reprinted, I think, 17 times is how many times it's gone through. And it's turned into the newest film by Steven Spielberg, perhaps the most legendary director in modern cinema. And I think there were a lot of question marks with this film, because some people have some problems with the books. A lot of people questioned why Steven Spielberg would be taking on a book that was, in many ways, an ode to his own work. It's the story of this... It's set in 2045, the film is... And it's about this virtual reality world that everyone on Earth lives in. And the creator himself was obsessed with the pop culture of the 1980s. And when he dies, he told everyone that he's hidden secret keys inside of his world. And if you get them, you get the kingdom. It's kind of a Willy Wonka story.
And his world is called Oasis.
Yes, it's called the Oasis.
And the only way you get in Oasis is through virtual reality, because the world is a slum.
Yeah. And so since this guy was obsessed with the pop culture of the 1980s, there's a million Steven Spielberg references. There's references to, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and Matthew Broderick films and all these, you know, every single possible thing you could possibly think of from the 1980s.
And loads of 80s music as well.
Loads of 80s music.
Because I was watching the trailer going, hang on, this is a film set in 2045. Why have they got 80s
yeah.
tunes?
This now makes sense. Good for me, isn't it? Let's have a listen to that trailer.
Come with me.
This is the Oasis. It's a place where the limits of reality are your own imagination. People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do, but they stay because of all the things they can be. I'm here talking to all of you now because our future is being threatened.
Go, go, go!
I just came here to escape, but I found something much bigger than myself. I found my friends.
What up, Z?
I found love. And now, people have lost their lives.
No, 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 no.
This is war for control of the future.
Find him.
Land of Pure Imagination. Anybody know who wrote that song?
I know Gene Wilder sang it. Who sang it?
Wigfield.
No, not Wigfield. Kenny Loggins.
Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, it's a Kenny Loggins song.
Really?
Yeah.
That guy was all over the movies, especially in the 1980s
as well. Yeah, he was, wasn't he? With Danger Zone.
Danger Zone. Yeah. Footloose.
Footloose, yeah.
Mm. All over it.
All right.
You know when you watch movies that are set in the future, you know what I particularly love? The things they come up with that they think we'll fight about in the future. I always find that really interesting. And one of the things in this movie I read is bandwidth riots.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Yeah, it's a small bit there. I think this is also, the problems in the future are very much the problems of now. this world at the same time that the major antagonist is this company that's trying to get control so that it can monetize every single possibility and take all this information and sell it. As we've been talking about Facebook on Snuff for the last week.
I was going to say.
It sounds kind of familiar. Yeah. So there's so much in this. It's also, you know, it's the battle for net neutrality as well. So there's so much in this film that's really relevant. I was really skeptical over this movie, whether or not it would be good or not, because I don't really like the book. I think that there's a lot of problems with the book.
Is it just one book?
It's just one book so far. He's working on the second one and the third one, Ready Player 2, 3, so they're coming. But the first book didn't really work for me because I think it's kind of stupid and pointless when you have these tests. Like, one of the tests in the book is this character, he has to recreate the first 15 minutes of War Games starring Matthew Broderick, line for line. He has to play Matthew Broderick's character. Why? To show that he really knows War Games. Congratulations, you've passed. You're the best nerd. What's the point of this? It's gatekeeping. It's just, ooh, look at how much I know about this movie. I think the thing that Steven Spielberg took with this film, and the reason that this movie works, is that Steven Spielberg put heart into this movie. When you go through these tests in the film, it's not just about how much nerd stuff you know. It's not just about the references. It's about the person himself. He wants you to know, you know, his own history, the things that he cared about. Some of the tests are about, you know, the woman that he loved was never able to tell that he loved her. So there's so many things here that anyone can connect with. So even if you don't love these pop culture references, I still think this is a movie you're going to enjoy.
Would you have passed all the tests?
No, definitely not. A number, I'm sure.
So, Simon Pegg in this movie.
Yes, I was able to speak with Simon Pegg and I was the rest of the cast as well about this film. And he is as amazing as ever. He plays the Steve Jobs to this creator's Steve Wozniak. And, of course, the last time that we saw Simon Pegg back in Dubai, he was filming Star Trek. And, you know, so he's obviously become kind of king nerd in a lot of ways. He starred in Star Trek. He was in Star Wars. He's done two Steven Spielberg first times at all. So it was great to speak to him again after last hearing him here at the press conference in Dubai.
The press conference.
Ah, yeah, of course, I remember. Oh, William from the press conference, yeah.
That's of course, that one, you know, of
How
course.
How are you?
You've had a chance to see the film now, so what was your reaction to it? What struck you most about it?
It's just an onslaught of visuals and ideas and tension and excitement. It's an amazing experience. It's a film that genuinely does lend itself to repeated viewings. I think you can watch it in a variety of ways. You know, you could watch it purely for the story, you could watch it purely for the visual experience, or you could watch it to, you know, check off the various cultural touchstones that appear on the screen, you know, in varying degrees of obviousness.
It struck me as both the book and the film are about a fan who's, you know, obsessed with this pop culture, is able to live his dreams and live inside the world that he knows so well. It struck me very much that it's kind of the Simon Pegg story.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, I try and keep a slightly more forward-looking attitude, though, when it comes to things. You know, I think the thing with the Oasis is that it's built by a man who cannot leave his own past. And as such, he sort of brings the future generations into that past, too. He makes the future obsessed with the past. And, you know, for better or for worse, nostalgia isn't always a great thing. You know, sometimes it can be a little bit it can arrest your progress in terms of moving toward the future. So I think in that respect, this is quite a cautionary tale. And, you know, by the end of it, when they're living in the real world as well, it's celebrating as much real connections as it is connections within the Oasis.
Do you think that's a view that you have through the experiences that you've had? Do you find that young Simon, the Simon that was writing Spaced, would have felt the same way watching this film?
Yeah, I mean, young Simon would be very excited to be doing the things that old Simon's doing, I'm sure. But old Simon's already thinking about the next thing that he wants to do rather than looking back. So young Simon was always looking to the future, but I think old Simon is too. It's very exciting to talk about myself in the third person like that. No, it's very exciting to... careful. It's very exciting to be part of this, you know, as someone who I don't, the irony of it isn't lost to me at all, that the man who directed this film is partially the reason I love cinema of this kind, you know, that makes me feel very lucky and very privileged.
Did you throw a glass at Simon Pegg?
Yeah, he made me laugh. I wasn't expecting it. I knocked over my Ornaman C that I had sitting at my feet.
He said careful in like a baddie in a film kind of way, didn't he? Like, careful.
Yeah.
I will kill you.
Right, we're going to come back, hear more from the cast of this film with William. Ready Player One.
Real time.
Should we change his name to the Tickets Film Criticizer?
I was the chief executive film critic for a while. I seem to have lost my
title. You've gone down a bit.
There you go. That's what happens when you run off to Tokyo,
isn't it? You got demoted, yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, we're talking about what you're calling the big film this week.
This is a big film.
It is a big film. I personally think, coming up a little bit later on, we have the big film. But we'll get to that. It's fine. It's fine. Simon Pegg's not in that one. And I know you chatted to Simon Pegg, which is good. And actually, hearing Simon Pegg talk about this movie is making me want to go and see it more than watching the trailer.
I think he's an incredibly charming, well-spoken guy. He's not in this film as much as I'd like. It's a supporting character. He might actually be in it more than you think. Hint, hint, wink, wink. I think one of the fun things about this film is that a lot of it takes place in this oasis, in this other world, and so you're able to have characters play different versions of themselves. Lena Waithe is one of those people who, in her first starring role, she actually just won an Emmy for writing the episode Thanksgiving of Master and Nun. She's the first black woman to ever win the Emmy for writing, so she's come into the world very, very prominently. I think she's tremendous in this movie. But I mentioned that I had some problems with the book, and one of the things that a lot of people had problems with about the book is that her character, to give away a spoiler of the book, is, you know, the main character is this white kid, and he has this young white best friend that he attends high school with, and then he finds out at some point, dun dun dun, she's actually a black woman. And he's kind of like, oh, it's fine, I forgive you. And a lot of that struck a lot of people as weird, because why does he need to, like, forgive and accept her?
Well, because you shouldn't lie about who you are. No matter what you are, who you are, the fact that you've lied about who you are should seek forgiveness, I think, online.
But that racial aspect,
I don't think it's a racial thing. I think the big fat lorry driver who's lying about who he is should be sorry about lying about being a businessman when he's a big fat lorry driver. Like, you should be who you are, even if it's online.
Well, no one in this film is who they are. That's kind of... So she's not... There's nothing to apologize for. It's kind of like having not having your real name on Reddit.
So why is she apologizing then?
Yeah, so it's a weird aspect. But in the movie,
like
they take that away.
Not like in a catfish kind of sense.
It was weird. I didn't like it. But in the movie, they take that...
It gave you an icky feeling.
It did give me an icky feeling. It gave a lot of people an icky feeling. But in this film, she doesn't... have that. She's just she's a male character, but it gets rid of the racial aspect entirely. So when I spoke to her about it, I had to ask what she thought about that change.
There were some people that found the character in the book a bit problematic because it's a woman of color who's ultimately a white kid, and the racial aspect of it kind of plays felt a bit off tone for some readers. And in the film, it's very much different than that. So how did you feel about those changes to your character and making it less that narrative and instead something different?
I really liked that. I really liked the fact that the character sort of didn't have a race, you know, in the movie. Just had my cadence and my vibe and my swag. And I think it made a lot of sense, you know, for the character to want to be a guy in that real world, because she kind of plays in a guy's world and she doesn't want to be treated any differently. And I think that's why she decided to go with the avatar that looked like that.
Ah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Okay, good twist. I'm just a little bit distracted because a beautiful text message has come in.
You're going to love this one, aren't you?
To 4001. You just be quiet over there. Mark Lloyd is wrong about the songwriter of Pure Imagination. It was written for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by British film composers Leslie Bruchuskus and Anthony Newley.
All right.
Where we get Kenny Loggins in
there?
Yeah,
I know Kenny Loggins has definitely 100% done it. He's done it for sure, and I'll just check in my little archives. I could be wrong.
Under an assumed name.
Yeah, maybe on an assumed name.
You're the only one who knows the truth.
But thanks for texting in that one.
Yes, thank you very much. So who else did you get to speak to?
So one of the things that I really appreciate about this as well is that the book is all about this one guy, and how he's this great hero, and he knows everything. This is an ensemble film, though. It feels a lot more like a Steven Spielberg film. Every single person in the film is important. It's not just this lead character. Of course, the lead actor, Ty Sheridan, has really come out. He's only 21 years old, but he's really, I think, worked with some amazing directors so far. He's great in this film, and Olivia Cooke as well stars opposite him as Artemis, with a 3 in it, in leet speak. And he really appreciated that change, too. He was glad this wasn't just his own story. It was an ensemble film in the Spielberg fashion.
Yeah, I had read the book a couple times before we shot, and what's great is, across so many of Steven's movies, you see you know, a great camaraderie amongst young people, and I think that's something that's very present in his films, and especially this one. And I feel like he does that because he is kind of, when he's on set, he's enthusiastic, kind of like a child is, and he gets excited about the things that I get excited about, or I even got excited about when I was 6 years old. So it felt like a very, you know, he has a youthful spirit that I think bleeds into his films.
If you just tuned in to The Ticket on Dubai I-103.8, you are listening to exclusive interviews with the cast of Ready Player One. William Mullally is here. He's our Ticket film critic. Executive film critic, criticizer. Did you like this film?
I did like this film. I did not expect to like this film, but I did like this film. I thought it was very fun. I think I do have some problems with it. I think some of the references just feel like references. You know, they didn't really do anything with them. They weren't really there for any purpose other than to say, hey, remember that movie? Including a long sequence with The Shining. But I think it's fun enough and the heart is warm enough that this film really shines through, and it was enjoyable throughout. And I do think it's a movie that a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun with this weekend from all ages.
So coming from Steven Spielberg, also Ernest Cline collaborated with him on this film.
He did. He wrote the book and he wrote the film, and he actually started writing, he told me, the book before he even had a book deal. Like, he wanted to write this film, but over the years it changed so many different times, and it was really once Steven Spielberg came on board that it opened up and it became what it eventually became on the big screen as such a success as it is.
That was just the best collaborative experience I've ever had, and you know, I got to work with one of my friends and then one of my heroes to reimagine my story. And we all worked on it together, and every change that we made, I got to help make. So I feel good about all those, you know, and now having seen the finished film, I wouldn't change anything or question any of the choices that Steven made. It was a total team effort. And, Steven was such a huge fan of my book and had a paperback copy filled with post-it notes and highlighted passages that he carried around on the set and would refer to, and would actually have the costume department and the production designer referring to my novel. So things that were in my book, that never made it into any draft of the script, ended up making it to the film just because he had everyone using my novel as a reference. So that's part of it. He's just an amazing collaborator and so respectful to creators and as a creator himself, but also wants to help you reimagine your story, bring it to the big screen. So he just brought, his amazing storytelling sensibility and his unique visual style to my story, which is, a perfect marriage because he is one of the people who inspired me to become a storyteller in the first place. And, themes and storytelling tricks that I learned from him were already woven into Ready Player One. So it was just the perfect marriage of source material and director.
It's a big film that we're talking about this week. I'm just going to interrupt it with breaking news and a confirmation that Mark Lloyd is, in fact, wrong about the songwriter of Pure Imagination.
Pure Imagination.
Have you got anything to say for yourself? I mean, this is probably the biggest scandal since Steve Smith.
Well, I got close to it, didn't I? I mean, Kenny Loggins did actually cover the song. I thought I could have sworn that he wrote it, but he didn't. So it was the composers Leslie Bersous and Anthony Newley.
This has rocked people's
and
trust.
It's made your weekend. This has made your weekend. Let's get back to the movie, shall we? Yeah, that was Ernest Cline then.
That was Ernest Cline, writer of the film, writer of the best-selling book, writer of the sequel Ready Player 2 coming up soon.
Are you sure he's the writer?
Oh, he is.
You better check that.
But yeah, he was, obviously he's huge on nostalgia. He also wrote the film Fanboys. He loved those pop culture aspects. But for the stars, Ty Sheridan and Olivia Cooke, that wasn't why they liked this film. And that wasn't why they liked these characters or playing them or anything about the film. It was really about that heart and the nostalgia really fell by the wayside for these lead actors, as they told me.
This movie is a fantastical event with lots of 80s pop culture references and video game winks, but I think at the core of it, it's a story about overcoming evil and friendships and these lasting relationships and the struggle to accept your true self and your identity, and I think that's just universal, relatable themes.
Yeah, and they all have, you know, they're very relatable characters because they're at the core of this movie, I feel like it's about humanity, and they all have some quality about them that they're not able to accept, and it's that's apparent in, I think, our high five characters, the five characters we're kind of following through this story. So I think that part about the film really spoke to me as well.
We're going to hear more from Simon Pegg, which I'm quite excited about. Do love a bit of Simon Pegg. When we come back on Real Time, talking about movies, also got a movie for the little ones. You know they brought Paddington back from our childhood and made a movie about him, and people loved it. Well, you will never guess who is back now. Think carrots.
Real Time.
Hey, and just before we move on, that song, you know, The Pure Imagination, that is, I'm floored, was actually, guess who else sang it? Maroon 5.
I don't even know the song. If I'm honest.
Come with me, and you'll see
a land of pure imagination.
No. Nope.
Pretty much that.
Yeah.
Don't know it.
Actually, William, you were doing it a lot better than me. Anyway, it's part of the soundtrack of the movie that we're talking about, the big movie this week.
Yeah, it was in the trailer. It is very much a Willy Wonka story about this man who leaves his fortune and the control to the virtual world that everyone lives in 2045, if you can solve his questions three. And the man who does it is named Percival. And Simon Pegg plays this man's partner, the man who helped him found this business. And I spoke to him while he was in London, and I asked him, straight up, what was the best story that Steven Spielberg told you on set?
What was the best story that Steven Spielberg told you on set?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, you can't tell me that. Second best?
He told me some amazing stories about about shooting the scar comparing sequence in Jaws, and about shooting Indiana Jones, and you know, casting Close Encounters. These stories were just such a... so interesting to me. You know, they were about something I thought I knew everything about, and so to hear them from literally from the horse's mouth, though Stephen is not literally a horse, but the literal figurative horse's mouth, was a treat.
To risk giving away some spoilers, were you portraying two different types of performances here? You have the motion capture aspect of it as well, so how was that experience for you?
It was great. I feel you know, we all appear in the virtual world as well as the real world in some capacity. With Tintin, the first film I did with Steven, that technology was fairly nascent. I think, I mean, it still is really, because it's ever changing and ever evolving. But this time round, what would be, I guess, 7 or 8 years later, the technology has moved on further, and the process is sort of easier and more... easier to envisage. We had 3D sets to walk around. We had virtual reality goggles that we could put on and see the sets we would be in, which was amazing. So yeah, it was great to get back and do that again, having done it before.
That is incredible. I don't think I could be an actor nowadays. Not that I could any day, but with all of that to think about as well.
Yeah, Spielberg, he was able to actually put on the 3D goggles and set up a virtual camera in the shot to figure out what angle he wanted to shoot this virtual world. Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
Yeah, so things have really, really changed. And Lena Waithe actually was able to, in her motion capture performance, not only play this other character of H, but she played the Iron Giant, you know, made famous by Vin Diesel in the late 90s animated film. And she, you know, she pulled it off. She entered this gigantic battle as the Iron Giant, and it was very... Have you ever seen the Iron Giant? It's a beloved film.
No.
You should see the Iron Giant. It's one of the best animated films ever made.
Oh, was that the guy who wrote Pure Imagination?
No, that was Kenny Loggins, I think.
Oh, no, I'm never going to live this down, am I? I think I'm going to leave now.
Yes, but no, I asked Lena about how what it was like to play the role made famous by Vin Diesel in the late 90s, and here's what she told me.
It was a new experience for me, be doing motion capture, well, for all of us, honestly. And it was actually really fun once I got the hang of it, because there's no limits to what I could try or do or how many takes we could do. So it was quite freeing, actually. So I enjoyed it.
You're now the second person after Vin Diesel to play the Iron Giant. So how was that for you?
Yeah, I wonder if there'll be like a battle, like my Iron Giant versus his. I wonder who will win. We'll see.
How did you prepare for that? How long did it take you to find yourself in the Iron Giant?
Well, the acting coaches that were on set were great, and so was Steven, in terms of making sure my body language was a little bit stiffer, and you know, that I moved a little bit slower, and that's the thing. I was like, I was just bigger, and so I had to make sure my body movements reflected that.
The time delay laugh is probably the cutest thing I've heard on our show in quite a long time.
Sometimes that can really be awkward. There's been times when I've done a FaceTime interview with an actor, and because I haven't laughed at their joke in time, they just get mortified.
So that's the big movie then this week, Ready Player One.
No. It's what William says is the number one movie this week. I have got another suggestion.
You've got other things.
Not this next one, but coming up.
Well, so this next one is aimed for the children.
It is. I mean, I think that a lot of people will have grown up with this one as well, myself included, and that is Peter Rabbit.
Yeah, I did. I had the cereal bowl with Peter Rabbit on the side.
Really? I think I might have had that too.
Ah, not the same one.
Yeah,
didn't
same
share
one.
It.
Found it in your trash and have at it. But no, it was. I flew to London to speak with the cast about this, and it's a really, really wonderful cast. I think for a lot of these animated films, although this isn't just animated, we do have Peter Rabbit, this mischievous rabbit who lives in the outside of Mr. McGregor's farm, and he goes in, takes his vegetables. Things didn't go so well for his father, who is eaten and put into a pie by Mr. McGregor. And in the film, in this one, anyhow, the first film actually that they've allowed, the estate of Beatrix Potter has allowed them to make, because they never thought that anything kept to the spirit of the books before, until this Peter Rabbit was made. Mr. McGregor dies and his grandson comes in and takes over and kind of gives the farm a new feel. And we have Daisy Ridley here, we have James Corden, we have Donald Gleason. It's Margot Robbie, and it's really a tremendous cast, and I think they bring in a lot of great performances.
Let's have a listen to the trailer.
Once upon a time, in a beautiful wood, there lived a rabbit named Peter with a blue jacket.
Sorry!
And no pants.
We've got the garden. Help yourself to anything. Wait, didn't you try to eat me? Show me your teeth. Do like a goat, like... It was you! I knew it! How are you? So good to see you.
Of one thing that could possibly stop our fun.
McGregor is coming! Everyone hide!
So following in the footsteps of Paddington, taking a character from our childhood and bringing them to our children now, if I had any children, we make-believe children, people are saying they've really pulled it off. The rabbits look pretty real too.
They do, and I think it has a... Will Gluck has other made films like Easy A and Friends with Benefits, so it's very much a comedy, but it's made to make kids laugh, and that's very clearly their aim. It's very pacey. Like, I think kids of any age are going to be fully engaged at the screen, and I think it definitely has a different feel than the books, which are, kind of pastoral and quiet. This one's very loud. It has a lot of music, but I think because of the cast and because I think... kids have really enjoyed it. That's really what's most important here.
So you grew up reading these books?
I did, and it was my grandmother, Camille Mullally, is obsessed with these. She was a teacher, and she has every first edition of these books, and so I have very warm memories of these books myself, as do Elizabeth Debicki and Daisy Ridley, who play Cottontail and Flopsy, respectively, told me.
Is Beatrix Potter big in Dubai?
I think she's kind of big everywhere. Oh,
that was a very political answer, which is no, you were sent here by someone who told you to come.
No, I think these books are iconic everywhere. Mm. I mean, for me, the most important thing was my grandmother growing up reading me every single one.
She was first edition. That's nice.
So what was your guys' first experience with the books growing up? Do you remember?
My mum used to read us them all, too.
Mm. My mum read them to me, too, yeah.
Mm. So great.
So sweet. Mm. Gosh, we better do that for our children, otherwise we would have...
I know.
The circle has to
we
be...
We would have failed
them.
So, each of you, I think, brought a lot to the character yourselves. And I know Will, I think, changed a lot of the characters as you started doing the whole process. So can you walk me through that? How much changed from the script to what ended up on the screen?
I think if we read the script now, we would be surprised by how much it changed, but it didn't feel like it was changing. It just felt like it was sort of adapting, because it's bound to, if you're filming something, if you're recording something and the other person isn't there, it's all reactions.
Mm.
So it's bound to happen that you're going to have to tailor reactions and stuff like that. Mm.
I feel like, there were sort of different incarnations of them, but every time they would sort of develop, it's almost like they would level up one and they become more specific and more detailed. But you would have the residue of whatever you'd recorded previously and little character traits. But also, as an actor, it's a really beautiful process because you only get better the more you do it. And so by the time we're recording the final sort of lines or versions of scenes, we've done quite a few hours with the voices, and so it's sort of more natural.
I mean, I think there are funny moments in the books, but this is hugely a comedy, and so much of comedy is about that interplay. So were you guys able to try to build chemistry as sisters offset? Did you meet during the process?
We recorded together to begin with. We had two sessions together, which was really helpful.
But I've never met our other triplet.
Really?
Yeah, so that chemistry is, you know, some skills.
That's some serious acting.
That's some serious, serious acting. Mm-hmm.
You know what? You are listening to exclusive interviews with the cast of Peter Rabbit, which is out this week in Dubai cinemas for the kids, for the big kids. William Mullally spoke to the cast. Now, James Corden did a funny thing to you. Don't tell us what it is. He grabbed you in a certain area. We're going to talk about it.
Kind of threw me off. Yeah, nowhere too inappropriate, but definitely didn't expect James Corden to be that friendly when we first met. And Daisy Ridley, star of Star Wars, actually told me some memories of filming in Abu Dhabi for that first Star Wars film, which we'll hear more.
Real time.
And to tell us all about them, William Mullally, our executive film critic, is with us. And I just love the way you said Peter Rabbit. Can you say it for me?
Peter Rabbit?
Peter Rabbit. Peter Rabbit.
No, I imagine Donald Trump says it the same way.
Yeah, we have a lot in common.
Hey, speaking of Peter Rabbit, you interviewed the cast and James Corden came at you.
He did. I mean, we will get to that in a minute because
you tease, William.
Daisy Ridley, Rey from Star Wars. I think one of the biggest parts and one of the biggest roles of her generation. So it's fantastic that she's gotten that. I think it's elevated her to huge stardom. But I think
to being
when
in
I
Peter Rabbit,
her, yeah, to being Cottontail and Peter Rabbit. She's very funny in this movie. She's got great personality. But it's actually in her career thus far, it was actually being in Abu Dhabi that she remembers most vividly.
When we filmed the first Star Wars, we went to Abu Dhabi for the first 2 weeks. So I was like, oh my God, I'd never been anywhere like it. And I remember eating, back when I ate meat, amazing steak and lobster. And I was like, someone else is paying. It was great. So
what else did you think of Abu Dhabi? I know you need to wrap up.
It was great. We went to a souk. I don't know if that's a word that would be used there. A souk, which was like, oh my gosh. And we went in like proper desert. We went to this amazing hotel. I'd literally never seen anything like it. And it was, I've never been so hot. Like people's shoes were burning.
That was such a blend thing. Amazing hotel, lobster, shoes burning.
Oh,
it was
just
like
and
a just fever dream.
Endless sand dunes. I'd never seen anything like it.
Abu Dhabi makes an impression on a lot of people, doesn't it?
It does, especially if you're there filming Star Wars.
Yeah, or Mission Impossible.
Hey, that's coming up.
Yeah.
They'll be back.
Yeah.
But yes, Donald Gleeson also stars in the film. He is the main character. This is the grandson of Mr. McGregor, who's taken over the farm. And I think the most entertaining thing about the film for me when I was watching it is his physical performance. And I think really he's one of the best and most, underappreciated actors of his generation thus far. He's in so many different things. He's also in Star Wars as General Hux. He's on Black Mirror. He's in Ex Machina. He's in Frank. He's fantastic as an actor. He doesn't do anything wrong. And even when he does something like this purely for kids, he's completely committed to it. And I think he's the funniest thing. And I think if you bring your kids to this, he's what's going to make them laugh most. And as I told him this, I think I made him blush a little bit.
But I don't find myself thinking back to any one moment because that would probably be weird. I do know that my very first job was a play, and that play was a comedy. It was a farce. And there was a purity to that first job that I remember distinctly about the joy of how lucky I was to be acting. Because you can get caught up in these other things about, like, my ankle hurts, or I don't know, you know what I mean, or I'm my head is just destroyed from thinking about this all the time. And then when I think back to how lucky I felt every day when I was doing that first job, and how lucky I was, and how lucky I am, I think it reminds you to kind of try and remain, to have some perspective.
Does acting fulfill you in the same way?
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And it's the same thing, but every now and again you have to remind yourself to take a step back and realize that you're a lucky person. you know, and that everyone thinks they've got problems, and everyone does have problems, but that at the moment I'm lucky enough to be working, never mind working on good stuff. So yeah, that's probably something that I try and remind myself of every now and again.
You're basically only doing good stuff. I don't understand your great movie. I'm not sure about that, but
no, it's good. I feel like I saw this and I felt like the kids were really laughing at it when I saw it in Los Angeles, like really, really properly laughing. And I thought, oh man, we did what we set out to do. And I take pride in that. That makes me happy.
That's got to be a good feeling.
Make the kids laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And playing Peter Rabbit, is that better, is James Corden. And when I walked into the room with him, he immediately saw my Air Jordans that I was wearing and grabbed them and would not stop talking about how much he loved my shoes. And you'll hear me, I'm very, very confused here, and I had no idea what to say. So I wanted to be funny. Nope, too confused, the fact that James Corden, for some reason, is holding onto my feet.
That's a good Jordan. Nice. You're aware of it. I know you. I want you to know that I.
If I had an extra pair,
I want you to know that I know you pulled some kind of incredible baller move with these flights, and it's made me feel inadequate.
All right? I appreciate. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's true.
You've made me feel inadequate with your choice of footwear, and I
should have thought about this.
But I'm loving it.
Okay.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it too. So how are you?
How are you?
Okay. I'm great.
It's all right. It's nice. Yeah.
Do people treat you differently when you come back now? What's it like?
I have to say it's lovely. It's a lovely feeling to come back to a place that is ostensibly it's my home. Essentially, that's what it is. This is where I always think of as home. It is my home. I just don't live here right now. And when I come back, I feel sometimes overwhelmed by a sort of level of just people just to feel really happy. People want to know what it's like. Every cab driver wants to talk about it. So if I go to watch my football team, I don't know. I feel even silly talking about it in such a way, but it's a very, very warm reaction that I don't in any way take for granted. It's not lost on me what that means when people are like that, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a big question to kind of just flip,
no, it's right. It's nice. It's nice. And I was thinking about it last night because normally I'm here with my family. So if you're here with your kids, you're just trying to basically keep them alive all the time. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're on your own, like I went to the theater last night on my own and then immediately was like, oh, I don't know if I should be here on my own because it all came a bit intense. But then I was like, well, this is lovely, you know? People are really nice.
I mean, you're able to also connect, coming from, you know, small town High Wycombe, growing up there, you're able to connect with small town England with this project, even though you're in a recording booth in Los Angeles.
Yeah, for sure. And also a lot of this was shot in Australia, so that's even sort of more alien. But I don't know if I ever sort of thought about the small town mentality of it, but I do like those jokes about thinking that your town centre was London. Like I remember growing up in High Wycombe thinking, going down to the Wycombe town centre, that was just the centre of the world, that was somehow a sort of metropolis. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then as you get older, you go, oh, it was actually quite small.
It's so fascinating. Yeah, just to hear you chatting to James Corden. I love that you bring us these exclusive interviews. I hope people are enjoying them in the car.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was weird. I feel like he had a real moment there. With you.
Yeah, I think we connect to the point where he forgot to talk about the movie entirely.
Yeah, fair enough.
Did you take
we know
the
about
shoes
the movie.
Off and offer them to him?
I should have.
Yeah. Nah.
I like him too much.
Too fandom. Don't do it.
Yeah, right.
Can I just really quickly squeeze in 7 days in Entebbe? I know you don't rate it. People online don't rate it. But I love films inspired by real events. This one's based on the 1976 hijacking of an Air France flight en route from Tel Aviv to Paris. And the film shows the most daring rescue mission ever attempted. I'm going to go watch it. PG-13.
After Ready Player One and Peter Rabbit.
Not sure. Probably first.
Right.
Is it that bad?
I mean, these are just good movies for you to enjoy.
Mm. It got a 1-star on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll talk about it next week and see if
I'm
going to
do Peter Rabbit.
Yeah, I think you'll love it.
Okay.
That's it. It's the weekend, guys.
That is it. Yeah, we're going to get out of here and go and spend our weekend doing now.
We'll see you next week.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.